woke, as it's between two nations of different colors, ethnicities, cultures, and cosmologies. Top American media is saying the next few weeks are make or break for the JCPOA, at least until September. The Biden administration is reportedly scrambling to present a new offer to Tehran as soon as next week. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
As the Yemeni army is pushing ahead with its offensive to liberate the city of Marib from Saudi-backed forces, Yemen's bloc of anti-aggression parties has held an event in the capital Sana'a to discuss the role of the southern and eastern Yemeni tribes in facing the Saudi-led coalition.
Many of the free people in southern Yemen stand beside their country in groups and parties, but they face severe repression from the forces of the coalition in southern regions, which confirms the ugliness of the crimes committed by the coalition against Yemenis. All Yemenis should be working together on a comprehensive plan to liberate all governorates after the liberation of Marib.
Since the beginning of the Saudi war in Yemen, eastern and western tribes played a key role in supporting the Yemeni army with weapons, money, and fighters. The participants say the tribes devoted their efforts to expel the foreign presence from their country.
The southern and eastern Yemeni tribes have many honorable stances, whether by spreading culture and awareness or supporting the political position inside and outside Yemen. They are also supporting the fronts of confrontation with weapons, men, money, and sending food convoys to the fighters on all fronts. The tribes are seeking to expel the foreign occupation from the country.
The Yemeni army has recently intensified its operations to liberate Marib, the last stronghold of the Saudi-backed forces in northern Yemen, a move which considered as the first step forward for liberating the rest of the country.
Yemenis agree that the liberation of the country will not succeed without the tribes backing the army, since the tribes themselves refuse the presence of any foreign forces, especially those of Saudi Arabia. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana'a.
The Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparity says the UK system is not rigged against people from ethnic minorities and there is no proof of institutional racism. In a report released Wednesday, it did admit that minorities still face overt racism, but insisted Britain should be regarded as a, quote, model for other white majority countries.
The report definitely touched a nerve, suggesting that disparities based on race in the economy and education are negligible. But people here in Brixton definitely disagree.
They live in their little tower and they've grown up in a certain way, but they don't see the reality of what black people are actually going through. So no, there is racism and we are not hung up. We need to just be heard that something is wrong with our bringing up our lives and how we are actually treated, because in reality we are seen as a different colour.
Institutional racism does exist. It exists in the education system everywhere. You can see it in a classroom. A teacher would discriminate against a black student over a white student just because he's black.
The report has been slammed as nonsense that flies in the face of all existing evidence. Flagged up are many issues that black and minority ethnics grapple on a daily basis. For example, the fact that black people are 9 times more likely to be stopped and searched by police than white people, and black mothers are 4 times likely to die in childbirth. So is this a genuine effort to understand racism in Britain or a PR stunt? Many black artists share the view that racism today is alive and well. Junior from the British Collective says his life and career were deeply impacted by racism.
When I was a kid and I was growing up, if I played football and a white guy kicked me, I would have turned around and I might have effed them blind. But it wouldn't have crossed my mind to call him white. Vice versa, the first thing that he would do is turn around and say, you black so-and-so. Not understanding for himself that he's being racist, he just took it as the norm. It hasn't changed since then. It hasn't changed in any shape, form, or fashion. I hear some politicians trying to turn it into, black politicians trying to turn it into a, oh well, we've come a long way. We haven't.
The COVID-19 pandemic and the disproportionate number of deaths among black, Asian, and minority ethnic people clearly illustrate that something is seriously wrong. being much more likely to have to live in a block of flats and do a job involving a high level of exposure to the public are the sort of factors that critics say prove systemic or structural racism is real. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, Said Hassan Nasrallah, urged Saudi Arabia to immediately end its war on Yemen and lift its blockade on its southern neighbor. Said Nasrallah called on Saudi Arabia not to waste time by proposing deceiving initiatives which lead to nowhere, and stressed that stopping the war and the blockade should be simultaneous. Nasrallah also warned of a Saudi plot to blame Yemen's Ansar Allah movement for the ongoing conflict in the war-torn country.
We need to stop the war and end the blockade. Then we can sit and negotiate. Here's where the deception lies. What does it mean if you stop the war without ending the blockade? It means that what they could not realize through a military war, they want to achieve through humanitarian and social pressure.
Elsewhere in his remarks, he said the U.S. is not as strong as before and is on a path toward collapse, while the axis of resistance is gaining power.
America is no longer the America that you knew. There is one main issue that Imam Khamenei has stressed in the last year, and I call on everyone in the region to ponder on that thought. That is the decline of the U.S. America is taking the downward path.
Speaking at an event commemorating late Sheikh Ahmad al-Zin, who was a pioneer in clerics who spoke for Palestine, Nasrallah stressed that the so-called deal of the century has died as a result of the Palestinian people's patience. Observers believe Sayyid Nasrallah's views shows that there is an opportunity for the entire region, even for the Saudis, to be able to stop the crisis of the war they launched on Yemen.
The speech of Sayyid Hassan shows that all regional sides enjoy an opportunity to hold on to their principles and at the same time preserve their achievements. This is true even with the issue of Islamic Republic of Iran and its nuclear program. All of these developments can pave the way for achieving political results.
Hezbollah leader also warned regional countries against relying on the United States. Hezbollah's leader then touched upon the political impasse in Lebanon, calling for the immediate formation of a new government. Hezbollah's Secretary General has stressed in his speech that most of the wars in the region, namely in Syria or Yemen, are mainly aimed to target the resistance and the Palestinian cause and to create a Sunni-Shia rift. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The prosecution in Sheikh Zazaki's trial finally completed the presentation of witnesses when the trial resumed in a Kaduna High Court, where the Islamic cleric is standing trial for culpable homicide and other charges which he pleaded not guilty. The prosecution lawyer expressed the hope that he will get a conviction following the presentation of credible witnesses.
We presented about 15 witnesses for the prosecution. 15 top army generals that were key actors, key players in the whole of the saga that led to the filing of the charges against Balaam Sheikh Zaki. One of our prayers is that the court should overrule the no-case submission, overrule the defense, and convict the defendants accordingly and pass the necessary sentence as provided for.
However, Zazaki's defense team dismissed the claim of the prosecution as it affirmed an earlier position that there shouldn't even have been a case against the Islamic cleric.
So far, based on the evidence advanced thus far, all the 15 witnesses so far, in our estimation, has not made any submission or given any evidence that incriminates the defendant in any manner whatsoever. So it's on that basis that we will be entering the no-case submission.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat have been in detention for over 5 years, despite the ruling of a federal high court ordering for their release. Over 340 of Sheikh Zazaki's supporters were killed, including three of his biological sons, when soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked his home and worship center in December 2015. Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat are detained in the Kaduna Correctional Facility, not far from this courthouse where the trial is taking place. Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki has just turned 70. And his supporters are calling for his immediate and unconditional release. Danjuma Abdullahi, Kaduna.
The European-wide Islamophobia epidemic has shown little sign of curbing as more countries join the criticized burqa ban. Swiss Muslims have been the latest to feel the effects of hate after a referendum passed banning all face coverings in public spaces.
Being free is to be able to show our face, respect women's dignity, have our own identity, and therefore I do not understand the discourse of people who want to imprison women behind this veil.
Following the ban, I reached out to Zainab, a German national who travels regularly to Switzerland, and asked how the ban has impacted her.
This ban makes me really sad and angry because it's the second article here in the federal constitution against the Islam. I think we have to understand that it's not against the niqab or against the minaret. It's against the global Islam. It's just an Islamophobia act, and I think they are not finished. They are looking for the next step.
The ban isn't the first anti-Islam move adopted by the Swiss, as I found out after speaking to the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland.
I just can confirm you. I mean, Swiss chocolate is great. Even we Muslims, we love it. And Toblerone is now even halal, so it's a great thing, yeah? In terms of Islamophobia, this is less great, yes, indeed. Actually, we are indeed suffering since 2009, when this first referendum came up against the minarets, which has been indeed banned with 57.3% of the Swiss population voting yes for this ban. We are constantly, during the last 10 years as a community, have been attacked by the media, have been the target of certain stereotypes.
Local campaigners and activists have vowed to fight back against the ban. However, the global Muslim attention fixed elsewhere, the defenders of Islam in Switzerland have yet to receive the support they deserve.
The reasons behind enforcing the ban vary from country to country, with some claiming it's a security threat, while others simply say that it contradicts Western ideals. Now, whatever the excuse, the traumatizing effect that the ban has on devout Muslim women has been made clear by those who suffer from its enforcement. Robert Carter, London.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, kitty, good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate.
praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Remove all sanctions is what Iran demands, and nothing less. This regarding the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that the United States left in 2018 unilaterally. Washington wants to talk to Tehran about the deal, but Iran says no talks are necessary. Iranian officials say that the U.S. can return to the deal without talks in the same way that it left without any talks and remove all sanctions on Iran.
Iran and the other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, held virtual talks on Friday to discuss the fate of the agreement. During the meeting attended by China, Russia, France, Germany, and Britain, along with Iran, the signatories agreed to hold in-person talks in Vienna on Tuesday. That will be part of the meetings of the Joint Commission of the Nuclear Deal. Later, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki claimed there will be indirect talks with Iran in Vienna.
These talks will be structured around working groups that the EU is going to form with the remaining partners in the JCPOA, including Iran. And the primary issues that will be discussed are the nuclear steps that Iran would need to take in order to return to compliance with the JCPOA, and the sanctions relief steps the United States would need to take in order to return to compliance.
But an informed Iranian source told Press TV that Tehran will hold no direct or indirect talks with Washington before it removes all anti-Iranian sanctions.
According to the immutable guidelines set out by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, any outcome of the joint JCPOA commission meeting, which is based on the notion of step-by-step removal of sanctions, is unacceptable. According to the guidelines by the leader, the Islamic Republic will only return to its JCPOA commitments after the removal of all U.S. sanctions and Iran's verification of the move. The Islamic Republic will not hold any mediated or unmediated talks with the U.S. before all sanctions are lifted. Just as the U.S. left the 2015 nuclear deal without negotiations and imposed sanctions on Iran, it should now remove all sanctions without talks.
Iran signed into the 2015 nuclear deal and committed itself to limiting its civilian nuclear program in exchange for removal of all nuclear-related sanctions against the country. That was meant to ensure Iran benefits economically from the accord, but those benefits were scarce and fully evaporated after the former U.S. administration withdrew from the agreement in 2018 and imposed unilateral sanctions against Iran. Analysts say all Iran is saying is that a once-negotiated deal does not need to be renegotiated.
The deal was the result of negotiations. So the negotiations have already taken place. The deal tells all sides what they're supposed to do. So the Americans know exactly what they're supposed to do. There's nothing to negotiate. If they want the deal to work, they have to implement it. But if they want to take bits and pieces and think that they can gain concessions from Iran, Iran is not going to do that.
Almost 3 months into the Biden administration, Washington is yet to right Donald Trump's wrongs on the nuclear deal. Tehran is clearly seeing through Washington's empty rhetoric and is calling for action. On Friday, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi told a virtual meeting on the nuclear deal that the remedial measures Iran took after the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal are reversible, but only after the removal of all anti-Iran sanctions and its verification by Tehran.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, journalist and political commentator Mostafa Khoshchesh out of Tehran, and editor-in-chief of the International Interest, Sami Hamdi, out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Tehran with Mostafa. Now, the leader of Iran's revolution has said that there will be no talks with the U.S. and that all sanctions must be removed and verified that they have been removed before Iran increases its cooperation with the JCPOA. It seems very straightforward and quite simple. So your take on exactly what the U.S. is trying to do, it seems basically trying to complicate this very simple equation. Your take, Mostafa.
Hello, Marzia. Thanks for having me. Well, as a matter of fact, all throughout the past two decades, there have been deals between Iran and the United States or its European allies. In 2001, in 2003, and from 2003 to 2005, there have been multiple agreements, also the last one being the JCPOA. In all these agreements, first, the Americans or its European allies, they came to Iran and tried to build Tehran's trust that the United States and the West is looking for a conflict resolution, and then they encouraged Tehran to join the talks, and there have been agreements. And in the words of Western officials and experts, Iran has always been loyal to huge undertakings on their all these deals, because it has taken part in all these talks and agreements, believing that it's looking for a conflict resolution. It's been honest about its approach and nature and intention. But the other side has defied its undertakings in all these cases with no exception. The U.S. has never complied with its undertakings, mainly removing the sanctions. Why? Because it has never been looking for a conflict resolution approach. It's always been trying to contain Iran through talks. So talks rather seem to be a sham, a means, just a weapon to harness Iran, to receive concessions from Iran, and force Tehran to continue talks and agree with more and more concessions before any kind of sanctions is removed. So Tehran is just sending this simple message to the United States and its European allies that you may not take part in negotiations with Tehran while pointing a gun at its head. You are not honest if you just continue to use this weapon of choice, the sanctions, and then claim to be after diplomacy and talks at the same time.
Okay, therefore, stay with him, Mostafa. Stay with him, Mostafa. Honest, let me get Sami in on this conversation. Sami, Press TV has been informed by high-ranking officials that there will be no direct or indirect talks with the United States when JCPOA signatories meet in Vienna next week, and there will be no step-by-step measures taken to re-implement the deal, as Washington is saying. However, American officials are saying the opposite. What do you think, in the middle of all this, that Washington is after?
I think that contrary to what's coming out, the statements from Tehran and from Washington that they are not talking to each other, Washington says it will not talk unless Iran comes to the deal, and Iran says it will not talk unless Washington comes to the deal. I think when you look beneath the announcements, the negotiations have already begun. Martin Griffiths went to Tehran at Linda King's request, the U.S. envoy, to Yemen to begin discussions on Yemen, and there are talks ongoing over how to split Yemen between the U.S. and Iranian influence. There are discussions already taking place with regards to Lebanon via the proxies Hezbollah and Michel Aoun between France, between Iran, and the U.S. is also involved in that. I think negotiations already taking place in terms of how to essentially find a framework within which to respect each other's spheres of influence, which is what the JCPOA's prime intention is supposed to be. It's not uniquely or specifically about Iran's nuclear capabilities. The second thing that's important to note is that the JCPOA was not necessarily a U.S.-Iran agreement. It was an Obama-Iran agreement. Obama bypassed Congress and passed the deal through executive order, which allowed Trump to unilaterally withdraw. Had Obama done it through the Congress, Trump would never have been able to unilaterally withdraw from the agreement, implying that Obama knew that Congress and the U.S. establishment were against this deal, and he steamrolled the JCPOA over the U.S., which essentially allowed Trump to withdraw from the deal. And the reason that Iran accepted the deal that Obama offered is because the terms of that deal that Obama offered was a recognition of Iranian superiority. It was a recognition that no decision in Baghdad can be taken without Tehran's permission. It was a promise from Obama that no decision can be taken in Yemen or Lebanon without Iran's permission. That's why Iran really wants to return to the JCPOA of 2015, because it is the ultimate recognition of years of outmaneuvering the U.S. in these regions and cementing this control. As one of the prominent Iranian advisors said, that Iran now controls four Arab capitals. The JCPOA was about cementing this Iranian influence and Iranian control. But nevertheless, I believe that negotiations now are ongoing. Biden realizes that he lacks leverage, that to talk to the Houthis, he needs to talk to Iran, that to talk to Baghdad, he needs to talk to Iran. And this is why I think the statements don't necessarily reflect reality.
Okay.
Iran wants to return to the JCPOA. Biden wants to return to the JCPOA. And what we're seeing is a war dance between the two to see how much can actually be extracted. Biden doesn't want to...
Let me get Mostafa back in on this. Stay with me, Sami. Stay with me. Let me get Mostafa back in on this. Mostafa, your take on what Sami has talked about, because basically what we're talking about right now is the JCPOA. And what Iran is saying is that, first, the United States needs to return to it and, of course, take away all U.S. sanctions against Iran before there are any talks about anything else. Your take on what Sami has just mentioned.
No, of course, I do not believe that there is any kind of talks ongoing between the two sides. Griffith represented the United Nations, And as soon as he wants to represent the U.S. interests, he would not receive any response. You know, Iran has repeatedly stressed that it would not make any kind of decision for the regional nations. It's not Iran's policy and strategy. It has never been. Iran stresses, it has always stressed, that it respects the regional nations, and these are the Yemenis that should decide their fate. This is not Iran. Iran is a friend and ally of the Yemenis, of the Iraqis, of the Syrians, Lebanese, and others, and they could facilitate peace, and they have always been calling for peace, but they never order anyone because they do not see this to be the Iranian strategy. That's the first thing. Second of all, it's diminishing the reality on the ground to say that it was an Obama deal. It was not. Obama was the president of the United States, the world power, and in all these countries, president represents a nation. That's the leader. That's the top executive official and the number one official in the United States. They struck a deal when Biden was also his vice president. It was a deal between the United States and the world powers and Iran. It was not an Obama deal, actually. Another point is the very fact that the JCPOA focused on Iran's nuclear capabilities, certain parts of Iran's nuclear capabilities, namely fuel production or enrichment, for a maximum 10 years. 6 years is gone, 4 years is left. The U.S. should prove to be a trustworthy partner. The U.S. has never been a trustworthy partner back in the last 20 years, and they have already worked out a mechanism that I call charlatanism. It is called fortifying sanctions wall. They have done copy-pasting of nuclear-related sanctions under Donald Trump, put it in place in breach of the JCPOA, so that if one day the Biden administration proves honest, that's very unlikely, but if it happens, and if he remains loyal, unlike Obama, to remove the sanctions, not just over the paper, but in practice, if he removes the nuclear-related sanctions, again, Iranian economy and central bank would not be able to do any kind of business with abroad, because identical sanctions have been leveled against Iran under the pretext of terrorism, another layer under the pretext of missile industry, another layer under human rights, and so on and so forth. So this is a total breach of the JCPOA. They have worked out this mechanism in order to force Tehran to go to other agreements. This is a total breach. Iranian officials have repeatedly stressed all the sanctions imposed on Iran in the past 4 years should be removed only and only in return for Iran's nuclear undertakings, Iran's resumption of its nuclear undertakings under the JCPOA.
Okay.
The JCPOA has never mentioned anything about the region or Iran's missile power. It's been about nuclear capabilities.
Okay, stay with me, Mustafa. Stay with me, Mustafa. Let me turn back to London and get Sami back in on this. Now, Sami, if Washington wants to continue with the deal, why doesn't the U.S. simply rejoin the JCPOA, which it signed, and remove all sanctions as it had agreed to do when it signed the agreement years ago?
I think it's because of the regional dynamics. I think it's because of the discontent towards the U.S., not just from Iran, but also from U.S. allies, from the UAE, from Saudi Arabia, even from Israel, from Egypt, and throughout the region. There is a sense that these countries that were against the JCPOA initially and that essentially found a room to maneuver to pursue their own interests under Donald Trump, there is this lack of cooperation from these allies and the rise of China and Russia as genuine alternatives. And Biden is worried that he will come across as weak if he goes back to the deal in the conditions where we see Iran very powerful in Iraq, very powerful in Yemen, where the Houthis have managed to resist the Saudi campaign to restore the internationally recognized government, where Assad is on the verge of winning in Syria, and where Hezbollah, despite popular protest, continues to dominate the government proceedings. Biden is very wary that if he comes back to the deal under the current circumstances, the whole world will say that Iran made the U.S. yield and that Iran managed to gain the concessions from the U.S. And this is Biden, much in the same way that Obama did, this is Biden bowing his head towards Iran. just as in 2015 when Obama, in conjunction with the JCPOA, allowed Iran to allow its militias to join the Iraqi army, essentially handing another Iraqi institution to Iranian control. This is the fundamental thing here. It's not about Biden wants to go to the deal, but what prevents Biden from going to the deal is a PR exercise. It's the PR campaign. And it's the same case with Iran. The reason Iran doesn't want to go back to the JCPOA, knowing full well Biden wants to restore the JCPOA, is because Iran cannot viably look its people in the eye. The regime in Iran cannot look its people in the eye and say that U.S. unilaterally withdrew, but we're still going to go back to the JCPOA. In this, Iran has a point, and Iran is justified in this. But what prevents the JCPOA, despite the fact that Biden, Iran, and Europe all want the deal, what prevents it is a PR exercise.
Well, let
how
me just,
do you
what,
present
Sammy,
it as
what
a victory
about the
for the
sanctions
US
itself?
And
with me, Sammy.
Iran.
Stay with me, Sammy, because you said that the U.S. With Biden actually wants to return. So the deal, which was signed in 2015, they agreed to actually cut out all the sanctions. Actually, all the sanctions were supposed to be dropped. So if, as you say, that Biden and the United States wants to return, why wouldn't they just cancel all the sanctions?
Because then Biden, in front of the world, in front of the allies in the region, in front of Europe, amidst the rising China, amidst the rising Russia, amidst the China that signed the 25-year deal with Iran that has expanded strategic ties with Turkey, that the UAE has expanded strategic ties with Russia, that Mohammed bin Zayed is on record as saying that the U.S. is no longer a trusted partner, that Saudi Arabia is coming out and saying that the U.S. no longer respects its commitment as a strategic ally, Biden will come out looking like the weak party. The U.S. power and image will be undermined in the region.
Okay.
The U.S. will not be able to recover from that. China and Russia will expand on it. Iran will cement its power, and Biden will lose. And this is why it's
me.
A PR
stay
exercise.
Me,
Biden is trying
okay.
to find
stay
a way.
Stay with me, Sammy. Let me get Mustafa on this. Okay, he says it's PR, and he says because the U.S. will look weak and it won't be trusted. But Mustafa, I want to look at this because it was an agreement that the U.S. signed. So isn't that a worse message to send to the world, that basically years of negotiating this agreement and its sign, and the U.S. never, even under Obama, never abided fully by its commitment? So the question now, also, Mustafa, can the U.S. be actually trusted at all, even at this stage again?
Well, of course not. You know, the goal of the United States is containment strategy. They want to contain Iran's power components in the missile industry, its regional power, its nuclear industry, and they would continue. If they succeed in the JCPOA, then their demands would never end. They would ask for a containment of Iran's nanotechnology. They would ask for a containment of Iran's aerospace technology and many other areas like laser technology. Tehran knows this pretty well. It would not allow the JCPOA, to be expanded to include other areas of its power components. The United States teaches the world at its universities to, you know, be responsible parties in your foreign policy as actors. You need to be responsible. But when it comes into practice, what we see is rule of the jungle, law of the jungle by the U.S. officials. If 7, 6, 8, 10 years ago, people had doubt about this very fact, that the U.S. is not a responsible party, now everyone knows this pretty well throughout the world. It's been a scandal, especially after Donald Trump came to power. We have too many confessions from Biden to Jake Sullivan, to Hillary Clinton, to Michael Flynn, to General Dempsey, the chairman of the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff, and many others, that it was the United States allies, Saudi Arabia and others, with the knowledge of the United States, that started this war of terrorism in this region, that supported Daesh, trained them, and went for toppling Assad and Iraq's Shiite government, and they failed, you know. I do agree that the United States is way weaker than 6 years ago. Now, it's just facing rising powers in this region.
Okay, stay with
Iran,
me, Mustafa. Let me give 30 seconds to Sami. Stay with
rise
me.
Of China.
Stay with me, please. 30 seconds to Sami, because I'm just about out of time. Sami, where do you think this is going? So the JCPOA parties are meeting in Vienna on Tuesday. Do you think that anything concrete can come out of from this meeting?
I think there's reason to be optimistic. I think if you monitor what's happening in Yemen, what's happening in Iraq and these other places, when you see that Iran is still engaging with calls from the EU to stick to the deal, when you see that Biden, it's more of a PR exercise and that he wants the deal, I think there's room to be optimistic. I think all the parties want a deal. I think we're heading towards it. I think the war in Yemen is going to wind down. The region is going to be divided between Iran and the U.S. And now it's about to what extent Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the UAE can ensure that they are also a party to what takes place in the region, or whether they will be steamrolled by this deal in a similar manner that Obama did in 2015.
All right, stay with me, Sami. Mustafa, 30 seconds.
I don't believe that there will be any kind of talks over the region or any other thing. I believe in Vienna we will see discussions over a return to the JCPOA. Tehran would not, give up any of its requests. It would not cross the red line. It will, I believe, it will remain steadfast and very firm on its request for the removal of all sanctions and its verification by Iran before.
Okay. And on that note, I am so sorry. I appreciate both of you being with us on this debate. Journalist and political commentator Mustafa Khoshchesh out of Tehran and editor-in-chief of the International Interest, Sami Hamdi out of London. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
French President Emmanuel Macron Wednesday, 31st of March, ordered France into its third national coronavirus lockdown in an attempt to prevent hospitals being overwhelmed, despite his previous defiance of the advice of scientists and his pledges of keeping the Eurozone's second largest economy as open as possible. We're prepared for you an article written by staff writers of Iran's English-language TV channel Press TV. The piece is titled, PM Johnson Fears Spread of France's Sad COVID Situation to UK. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has warned of the possible spread of what he described as the very sad COVID-19 situation in France to the United Kingdom. Boris Johnson said on Thursday, 1st of April, "I'm afraid you can see what's happening in France. It's very sad, actually. It's very sad." Adding, "When they get it in France and they get it bad, 2 or 3 weeks later, it comes to us." According to France's health ministry, almost 50,660 new coronavirus cases were reported in the country on Thursday, and about 310 new related deaths were recorded in hospitals, bringing the total tally of fatalities in hospitals to 69,904. The French Health Minister, Olivier Véran, told France Interradio that his country could reach the peak of the third wave of the pandemic in 7 to 10 days, with the new restrictions announced on Wednesday, 31st of March, by President Emmanuel Macron. President Macron on Wednesday ordered France into its third national lockdown in an attempt to prevent hospitals being overwhelmed. Despite his previous defiance of the advice of scientists and his pledge of keeping the Eurozone's second largest economy as open as possible, Emmanuel Macron's long-delayed order exposed him to criticism from rivals. Far-right leader Marine Le Pen said it was Macron's Waterloo, using an expression the French used to mean a definitive defeat. Marine Le Pen, who is expected to be Macron's main challenger in the 2022 presidential election, tweeted, "Unfortunately, it is the French people who suffer the consequences of these delays, of his pride and of his inconsistent decision-making, with a heavy price on their daily lives." The French Prime Minister, Jean Castex, defended the timing of the imposition of the lockdown, saying the government strived to strike a balance between acting neither too early nor too late. Prime Minister Jean Castex told lawmakers on Thursday, before they took a symbolic vote on the lockdown, which was boycotted by several political parties, he said, "These measures seem to us essential to allowing our country to get through what we hope will be this last phase of the crisis." President Emmanuel Macron has been accused by his political opponents and members of the public of behaving like a monarch who surrounds himself with a loyal inner court and listens to few others since he took power in 2017. Damien Abad, from the main opposition Conservative Party, told the lower house, "This lockdown, which you won't even call by its name, is a symbol of the arrogance with which the president and his government has wrapped itself up in." The World Health Organization, WHO's European head, on Thursday, 1st of April, criticized Europe's coronavirus vaccine campaign as unacceptably slow, as only 10% of the region's population have received a single dose of the vaccine, and 4% have completed a full course. He said in a statement, "The rollout of these vaccines is unacceptably slow. We must speed up the process of ramping up manufacturing, reducing barriers to administering vaccines, and using every single vial we have in stock now." The inoculation momentum has been curbed amid tight supplies, rows over exports and delays by some vaccine manufacturers, and concerns over the safety of the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine after rare blood clotting events emerged. Also recently, the World Health Organization, WHO's epidemiologist, Maria Van Kerkhove, warned of a very serious situation in Brazil, which has become an epicenter of the pandemic. Maria Van Kerkhove told a briefing, "Indeed, there is a very serious situation going on in Brazil right now, where we have a number of states in critical condition," noting that many hospital intensive care units are more than 90% full. A more transmissible virus variant is circulating in Brazil. Meanwhile, India's health ministry reported on Friday, 2nd of April, that the total number of COVID-19 cases surged by 81,466, the highest in 6 months, as several states were hit by a second wave of the pandemic. The new infections bring the total number of cases in India to 12.3 million, making India the third most hit country from the new coronavirus after the United States and Brazil. The death toll also increased by 469 to 163,396. Amid the surge in the number of cases, many Indian states are mulling imposing fresh restrictions on the movement of people. Two sources told the Reuters news agency recently that India also decided to delay big exports of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 shot made in its territory by the Serum Institute of India to make sure it could meet local demand. According to the head of Africa's disease control body, the Indian move is expected to undermine the African Union's plans to vaccinate 30 to 35% of the continent's population by the end of this year. The director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, John Nkengasong, said at a news conference in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia on Thursday, 1st of April, India's temporary hold on major exports of vaccine shots will definitely impact our ability to continuously vaccinate people. The African Union's target primarily relies on supplies from the COVAX facility, through which 64 poorer countries, including many countries in Africa, are supposed to get doses of vaccine from the SII, the Serum Institute of India. In an attempt to seek a more equitable access to the vaccine, the World Health Organization, WHO, and the Gavi Vaccine Alliance are leading a facility called COVAX to procure and deliver doses of approved vaccines fairly around the world. The director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, John Nkengasong, said, "If the delay continues, I hope it's a delay and not a ban that would be catastrophic for meeting our vaccination schedule." Some 4.25 million coronavirus cases and 112,000 related deaths were reported in African countries, though experts have said the actual figures could be much higher. Nkengasong added that the African Union has pivoted towards the Johnson & Johnson vaccine shot, in part as a result of the delay in delivering of AstraZeneca vaccine shots and also because it is a single-dose shot. Johnson & Johnson on Monday, 29th of March, announced that it would supply the African Union with up to 400 million doses of its vaccine. Nkengasong said the gap until the arrival of the Johnson & Johnson doses in June or July is certainly a concern. Meanwhile, China's Sinovac Biotech said on Friday, 2nd of April, its third production plant for its vaccine in Beijing was ready, doubling the firm's annual capacity to 2 billion doses of vaccines. According to a Sinovac spokesman, the third facility has started manufacturing procedures for bulk vaccine ingredients. Over 200 million doses of Sinovac's vaccine, dubbed CoronaVac, have been delivered globally, up from 160 million doses announced on 22nd of March. The company said it estimated more than 100 million doses of the vaccine have been administered worldwide. South America imposed new restrictions on Thursday, 1st of April, amid growing COVID-19 cases. Chile, which has recorded more than 1 million infections and over 23,000 deaths, said it would close all of its borders for the month of April, while it seeks to accelerate its inoculation drive. Jaime Belodio, a government spokesman in Chile, said, "We urgently need to make an additional effort because we are in a very critical moment of the pandemic." Meanwhile, a four-day national lockdown for the Easter weekend took effect in neighboring Peru, as it too responded its highest daily increase in cases with almost 13,000 new infections. Also on Thursday, 1st of April, Bolivia said it would completely shutter its frontiers with Brazil for at least a week from Friday and place border towns where the Brazilian virus variant had been identified under lockdown. Bolivia has registered about 12,257 coronavirus deaths out of more than 272,000 recorded infections so far. In the early hours of Friday, 2nd of April, Ecuadorian President Lenin Moreno announced on Twitter he had signed a decree bringing a state of exception into force. In affected provinces, movement will be restricted for 9 hours during nighttime. public gatherings are banned and municipalities have agreed to close public beaches in Ecuador.
Iran, IRIB English Radio.